Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast, where we don't have to wait very long now. It happens once a month. We're not used to it. It's very weird. Anyway.
It is very weird. Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can always reach us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can find the Waiting for Doom Facebook page, and all of our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
Yeah, and I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks, and you can get in touch with our Sentient Show Twitter account, Wilfred, at WFDPod. And we are also sponsored by Comicosity.
Yes, this week my semi-obvious pick of the week from Comicosity has to be the haiku that was written about Doom Patrol number one, which reads, Euro Universe, well, happy birthday, Casey. What did I just read?
Wow.
And this week we are joined by a very special guest, a man of mystery, medicine, metal, and mostly comics. He's been a friend and supporter of the show well before it even actually went to air, when a certain smart, young, handsome Australian fellow decided to float the idea on Twitter of a Doom Patrol podcast. Yes, this week we are joined by none other than Fractures.
Hi, guys. Great to be on here. What an amazing introduction as well. I need to record that and keep that for posterity. Holy cow.
Yeah, I'll make sure I don't edit that bit out of this.
Nice one, Mike. Nice one.
Hopefully someone's recording.
So. Yes, hopefully. Oh, yes. It's all good. Yeah, Wilfred's just giving me the digital thumbs up. Yes, welcome, Fractures. It's great to have you here. Tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got into the Doom Patrol.
Okay, well, so I'm Fractures, Frack. I live in the UK. I got into the Doom Patrol via random Morrison issues that I used to pick up when I was growing up as a impressionable young teenager in India. And if you think reading Morrison cover to cover all the issues in serial order is confusing, try doing that out of order, occasional issues. And despite that, I loved every issue that I could lay my hands on. And one of the first things that I did when I finally arrived on the shores of England was to find a comic shop and start plugging the holes on a number of series that I loved, of which Doom Patrol was one. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got involved with Doom Patrol. I did know a bit about Doom Patrol from the Teen Titan issues that I used to read, which mm-hmm. involved Robot Man, which I did like. And I had the first issue which I only picked up because of the Steve Lytle art. So the first issue of the Cuppa Bug run, and I quite like that as well. But when I laid my hands on Morrison stuff, it just blew my mind completely. Completely. I wish they'd go back to the Cliff spider body. I love that body. I thought that was amazing. I don't know why they got rid of that. I mean, there were cannons. You know, he had lights on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. Yep. Spotlights on his shoulders and cannons on his legs. I mean, Come on. But yeah. Sorry, I went on a bit on about that.
No, that's fine. That's what we tend to do on this show anyway.
It's the right place for that.
But I owe it to you guys for putting me on to the original series that I picked up in Showcase. Because actually, if I'm honest, and don't tell anyone, mm-hmm. I kind of think this stuff is, I'm enjoying this stuff more than the Morrison stuff, but
don't tell anyone. This is a safe place. You are amongst friends. Your secret is safe with us and whoever might tune in. Anyway, let's have a chat about the week that was in comics and life and such. And Frack, how's your week been?
Oh, brilliant. I mean, come on. Doom Patrol number one. What more can you ask for? You know, I actually managed to get to my LCS on Thursday. Comics come out on Wednesday, obviously, but I got there on Thursday morning. By mm-hmm. some fluke, I had nothing, no work in the morning. So I managed to get there. And my LCS kept all of the covers for me, all of the variants.
Nice.
And asked me to pick the one that I wanted. And I went for Brian Boland.
Ooh, nice.
I thought traditional. And I really liked that cover, but yeah, I mean, Doom Patrol number one was great. I'm loving DC Rebirth at the moment now. It reminds me of times when I used to really enjoy reading DC. So you know, I picked up this week Detective Comics and Wonder Woman, and Deathstroke. All of which, I mean, I haven't read Wonder Woman yet, but I mean, Detective Comics and Deathstroke were amazing. So yeah, I've had a good week in comics. I've ordered the Omega Men trade, even though I bought all the singles.
Ooh,
so I'm looking
nice.
Forward to getting that. And I've got Paul. I managed to get that Chase trade as well.
Oh, good, good.
Although I haven't managed to read it yet.
Add it to the pile.
So it's there. It's on the to read pile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But no, I've had a great week in comics. Actually, what about you guys?
I don't really want to talk about comics because I haven't had the chance to read anything other than Doom Patrol number one again. I can talk about that later, I think. But
okay.
Yeah, catching up on some movies. So I watched a pretty good movie last night, which was 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is the girl trapped in a bunker with a crazy man and another bloke. And what a fantastic film. If someone offers to tell you what happens at the end, punch them in the neck.
To be honest, that is what I do with most people who want to tell me the end of any movie, but fair enough.
Yeah. So that was a really good time. And what's it? Mary Elizabeth Winstead and John Goodman, mm-hmm. fantastic performances. And the young bloke who was in the newsroom. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that film. It was terrific. And I'm glad that I managed to hold off on seeing it for that long without having it ruined for me. So, yeah, good film. Very tense and fun. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Mm.
Cool.
What about you, Mike?
For me, I finally got to actually get near my to read pile for a change. I read a couple of issues of Spider-Gwen, including the annual, which had a one-page story about an Australian supervillain who raised drop bears and got them to do evil.
Wow.
Very, very odd story. I'll have to post pictures of it later. I'm surprised no one else mentioned this that I saw online. Maybe I missed it. I don't know. But it starts with apparently the quote-unquote legend of if a koala falls from a tree and you catch it, you're somehow bound to raise it. But then it raises the question, what if the person that catches it is evil and raises them for evil purposes? It's
wow.
It was very odd. So that, and I caught up on some of Marvel's Star Wars comics, which have actually been really good, and it's the only Star Wars title I read, but they're good. And yeah, I read a little comic called Doom Patrol number one again. So I think I've read it something like 8 or 10 times now. because my regular LCS only gets monthly shipments, I was a little bit cheeky and went to a different store to get one of the issues that was there, and I went for the Babstar one. I just love the bright pink.
Oh, that was a lovely cover as well.
Yeah, that's the lock screen on my phone still. Yeah. I just love how vibrant it is and how they're all standing around the arcade game. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, it's been a decent week. Yeah, been pretty good.
I got the Euro cover.
Because
it's. That will not be that if it gets reprinted. They've said they won't be redoing the sticker. So,
mm-hmm.
Mm.
Have you looked underneath the sticker?
I haven't looked underneath the copy that I have, but the one I got on Comixology showed me what was underneath, which was a picture of you and me high fiving.
Excellent. Oh man, I can't wait to pick up my copy, and then you and I can sign it, Paul, and sell it for
yeah.
my bank, you know.
Anyway, is that ticking me here?
Don't you want to go down on a certain
must be
don't you want to go down a direction way?
I don't think we need to this week. I haven't got anything.
Okay.
Have you?
Cool. Well, yeah. In that case, yes, that is.
Oh, you've got to keep all this
in.
Please tell me you're going to keep all this in.
Oh, only because you asked nicely, Frack. But yes, look, that ticking that's been going on all this time now has been getting quite annoying. So yes, let's look at the Doom Clock. Okay, so the Doom Clock is telling us that the last issue of a Doom Patrol book we had was issue 1 of volume 6 from Jared Way and Nick Darrington, and it's been 1 week since that came out, in case you missed the news. The next issue, number 2, is due October 12th, which is just 3 weeks away. So get ready for that one, kids. The last appearance of the Doom Patrol as a team, possibly still controversial, has been 1 year and 6 weeks ago in All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. And this week in Doom Patrol history, released September 22nd in 2004, for 1995 American, was the trade paperback The Painting That Ate Paris. This collection reprinted issues 26 to 34 of Volume 2 from the Morrison Case era, and of course it was mostly all about the Painting That Ate Paris story. And we discussed these issues in episodes 14, 18, 22, and 24.
Wow, and that was such a long wait for that trade, because the first trade came out sort of like 12 years earlier, and then they never did another one until that.
Yes, yes. So, and that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Hey, who likes Wild Dog?
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
No, 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 no. I'm taking this podcast seriously. There's no way that song will appear anywhere in the show or even the commercials. I'm doing this right. I'm FKA Jason of the Silver and Gold podcast. On September 17th, 2016, a new show will be appearing on the SNG feed. Wild Pod, a Wild Dog podcast, is a mini-series covering the DC Comics character that is sort of their answer to the Punisher, Wild Dog. I'll be covering the original four-issue miniseries, the 1989 special, and various other appearances of Wild Dog. Watch for it at sngpod.com or the Silver and Gold feed on iTunes and Stitcher. Vance, why do we even own that CD?
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
It's time for Doomsplaining, which is where we talk about the Doom Patrol on our Doom Patrol podcast, which is what we do, which is what we're doing now.
What are you talking about, Flanger?
Yeah, it's mysterious, but it's. I thought I'd change it up and talk about the Doom Patrol again.
Cool.
Anyway, so this week we are looking at Classic 60s Doom Patrol Volume 1, Issues 117 and 118. And Doom Patrol Issue 117 was published in February 1968. Well, that was according to the cover date, but it was actually came out December 5th, 1967, and it was a 12-cent comic. I wish comics were 12 cents. I wouldn't mind paying 1.5 for the Australian factor on that. Mm. Anyway, it was edited by Murray Boltonoff, and it was written by Arnold Drake, and it was the art was by Bruno Premiani, and the cover is by Bob Brown, not the Green Senator. And it's entitled The Black Vulture, and Frack is going to take us through this one. Over to you, Frack.
Oh, thanks. So can I just start by talking about the cover a little bit? Because this is actually an absolutely amazing cover, as far as I'm concerned. It shows you the chief, the way the perspective that it's been drawn in, the wheelchair looks as if it's going to tip over. It isn't, because both wheels are actually on the ground. And you've got these really detailed claws aiming for the chief, and all the guys walking off in the distance. And it just reminded me, of sort of EC-type covers. I just thought the cover is amazing, and I'm seeing it for the first time in color, because I've only got the showcase issues. I've got to be honest, it looks a bit better in black and white. I'm not a fan of the purple chicken feet. But from a cover point of view, I mean, that's an amazing cover.
The look on Chief's face alone.
It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Yeah, it's really well done, really well done. So, we open up, and every issue, as it used to in the olden days, starts with a huge splash page. And essentially, the summary is that the Doom Patrol is finished. The Chief is on his own and is in mortal danger from the Black Vulture's revenge. And then, luckily for us, we don't need the New York Mets crying towel because we're all up to date thanks to this podcast. But the comic starts off with a recap page summarizing the chief's mental manipulation of Madame Rouge with radio waves transmitted through the eyes of a really angry looking man in a painting. And the battle between evil Rouge and the reformed Rouge and her departure from the Brotherhood. Monsieur Malin is really upset, really. But he's comforted by the brain, who blips and bloops in his little nutrient tank and reassures him that she'll be back with them before long. Meanwhile, back in the streets of This Week in Love, we see that Madame Rouge is settling right in and has started redecorating the headquarters. She's replaced one of the TVs with a fire.
No!
Romance is in the air, and you can hear Marvin Gaye playing in the background. The chief is head over heels in love with Madame Rouge, so much so that you can hear his heart thumping.
Trying to hold back his feeling for so long. And if you feel like I feel, baby, then come on. Oh, come on. Woo. Let's get it on.
Oh, wait. That was Cliff thumping on the door. How rude. It's not even Cliff. It's half a Cliff. He gives them some story about a maniac with an atomic ray. It's more likely that he pulled off his limbs to get some attention from the chief. It ain't working. The chief dismisses him, as he should. Half a Cliff loses his battle with gravity and falls to the floor and crawls into the lab. The music starts up again. The couple are about to reset the mood. And then Negative Man bursts in. Will these star-crossed lovers ever get it on? Anyway, Negative Man apparently is on his way to the fridge to get some food for Larry, or so the chief thought. He actually wants to play dumb charades with them. And his first clue is to fly around in circles around the room. Madame Rouge is all in and starts guessing, but as always, the chief wins. The name of the movie was We're Out of Ham. By now, the chief has only one thing on his mind and mentions that there's loads of salami available. Madame Rouge decides to rescue the evening by making the most romantic meal of all. Popcorn. Sweet and salty. Yum. In bursts Larry, another petulant child who wants attention. You're not fooling anyone with that makeshift sling, Larry. He seems to still be upset about the ham salami fiasco, as he has only managed to get baked beans. Or something. Anyway, the chief tries to get rid of him, but Larry's not having any of it. Meanwhile, in the fifth biggest mansion in the DCU, someone calls up Rita and disturbs the world's fifth richest man from his baby nap. Now, this is an interesting interlude, isn't it? Because we get some more information about Dayton here, which is, I think, very, very important. Because not only is he the fifth richest man, he is now the fifth angriest person in the DCU. He can't be the first in anything. What a loser. So who do you think the other four angry people are? Oh. Batman's got to be one.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Come on, give me one. Give me one, Mike, and give me one other, Paul.
Oh. Black Adam.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, pretty angry. Okay. Yeah, that's good. Come on, Mike.
Does it have to be from this era or from any time in point?
Any time.
Darkseid.
Oh, yeah.
He's angry. That's a good one. That's a good one, actually. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, Dayton is the fifth. He's basically the fifth of everything in the DCU. Apparently, the end of the Doom Patrol is near. So Rita, as any sensible woman does, takes any excuse to leave the house which is occupied by Dayton. She rushes to the mansion to see Robot Man. He's now complete. He's no longer half. And Larry, who's better now because his makeshift sling is gone, arguing with the chief. She then proceeds, as the voice of reason, to remind the children of how the chief helped them in the past. But you know, the chief has still got salami on the mind and is losing patience with the kids. The boys lose their temper and finally leave the mansion for good. The ladies, so Rita and Madame Rouge, then have a fight in French, a language I don't understand. But it ends in both of them leaving. The chief is distraught, mainly because he no longer has a TV to watch. An ominous figure then looks at the chief through the window. Is it a vulture? Nope, it's a man in a bird suit with a whistle that he blows. It doesn't work, as he still has to call a condor, the king of birds. The huge bird bursts into the room in what can only be described as a power dive. So they describe it as a power dive in the comic. He must be after the salami that the chief had mentioned. But the chief doesn't like birds, so promptly shoots him with the action chair. The condor, who has mistaken the chief now for all the salami, lifts him up, action chair and all. But in an amazing feat of strength, the chief manages to strangle the bird and break his neck, because all of the power of the chief's legs is now in his hands, because comic book science.
Thank you.
No matter. The man in the bird suit has managed to tie three hummingbirds' beaks together with a needle and attacks the chief with them. The chief manages to kill them all with his action chair, although using an anti-aircraft rocket launcher seems a tad overkill for hummingbirds. Finally, the man in the bird suit decides to get the salami himself. He flies through the broken window and reveals his name, the Black Vulture. Ironically, his costume isn't black. But anyway, the chief then shoots him with a submachine gun from the action chair. The action chair is getting a lot of action this issue. Sure. Certainly more than the chief and Madame Rouge. But the gun jams. Oh, and the vulture attacks with a flight of death. So deadly, it involves a maneuver of missing the chief altogether. The chief decides the best way to save the salami is to lock himself up in the larder with it. They both race towards the door, but the action chair beats the vulture's hand rockets and the chief slams the door on him. The vulture then calls on the help of the Thunderbird, because he knows this bird of myth actually exists. And when it flies around, it normally has two bombs in its claws. So the Thunderbird drops these bombs, but the door holds and the salami is safe for now. Meanwhile, Robot Man saves Stan Lee from getting run over by a car, which prompts him to run back to the Doom Patrol headquarters. Larry is back on the way as well. Thankfully, we find out that Madame Rouge hasn't got rid of all of the giant TVs in the house. And Robot Man sees that the larder is under attack and is about to attack the Birdman with a statue when, in a horrible twist of fate, he gets taken down by Negative Man himself. The Black Vulture is really hungry now and manages to pull down the door of the larder with his bare hands. Luckily for the chief, there is another door to hide behind, a door of fire. The vulture is attempting to build up speed to fly through the door of fire. He's doing this by flying in circles around the larder. This is hilarious, sorry. Which reminds Larry of his dumb charade clue from before. And he tries to join in with the help of Cliff. They manage to grab hold of the Birdman and floor the villain, but then get taken out by Rita themselves. The Black Vulture manages to escape and uses his bird whistle to call on one of the deadliest birds of all, the bat. And not just any old bat. These are science-defying bats that use their bat sound waves to attack the patrol. And Cliff promptly loses all of his limbs as a result.
Take a drink.
Yeah, I take a drink. Yep. That guy will do anything for a bit of attention. Just as the vulture is about to call his killer hawks, which, to be honest, I really want to see what they look like, the larder is invaded by Native Americans on horseback. After a number of comments from Cliff, who will have to redo his race and equality training, Whitefeather makes short work of the Black Vulture and brings him down to earth. We then find out that this whole adventure was not about salami, but about revenge. The Black Vulture, or the son of Geronimo, as he liked to call himself in past, attempted a land grab and failed because of the chief and carbon dating. Simples. Carbon dating seems to be the only dating that the chief is capable of completing at this moment in time. Rita makes a comment that ensures she will also be going off with Cliff for equality training. The narrator then makes a comment that ensures that they will be joining Cliff and Rita at the equality training as well. Chief then lays down the law to the children about Madame Rouge saying, and if you look at that panel, they look, they're standing around like naughty children. And so they were. The kids accept the new status quo. And that's how they choose.
Oh, well done. I completely missed that whole salami subplot.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, if you read enough Morrison comics, you learn to look between the lines.
Yeah, I missed it completely.
But, I mean, all joking aside, I thought this was a great issue. I mean, it was action-packed. Mm-hmm. Absolutely action-packed. And, you know, the big draw for me with these issues is the art, and the art is amazing. The detail on the vulture, on the vulture's mask and the condor and the bird of myth, the Thunderbird,
yeah,
who looks suspiciously like an eagle, is amazing. I don't know what you guys think.
I think this is a great one. I love the design of the Black Vulture. He's got a really, you know, Marvel would have run with that character design for decades.
Yeah, they would have.
But yeah, it was a fun issue, particularly like, you know, the action chair just totally gunning down these birds.
I know.
Hummingbirds getting shot down.
With anti-aircraft missiles, I'll have you know.
A little bit of overkill, but...
When only the best will do, yeah.
Yeah, and my favourite panel has to probably be Rita jumping out of bed. Bit of negligee Rita.
Oh, you've got to say, Premiani can draw a beautiful woman. Sure. There's that one panel with Madame Rouge and the boys arguing with the chief and Rita bursting in. Actually, it's just under the panel that you were talking about.
Yep.
Oh, God, he draws beautiful women.
Yep.
It's I love this issue. Great action. I love the twist in the end. I mean, you know, White Feather pops out from nowhere. I mean, I never saw that one coming at all, ever. I mean, there was no inkling at all, apart from the fact that there was a Thunderbird. I suppose that is part of Native American myth, isn't it?
Mm.
But even I didn't catch on to that until I saw them burst in on horseback. You said this is a huge larder. I mean, there must be so much salami in there because they managed to fit in a whole bunch of people on horseback.
Yep.
It's amazing.
Yep.
Absolutely amazing. But yeah, no, I love this issue.
Yeah.
I love this issue. It's interesting to see as well, you know, Premiani sort of branching out a little bit. Like, you know, these last couple of issues, his panels are getting... It's great to have the showcase issues because I can see progression and the panels are getting bigger. You're starting to see splash panels for the first time.
Yeah, the art's getting more spacious and a bit more room to breathe now.
Mm.
Yeah, it's almost like he's getting more and more confident, you know, with what he's displaying. It's great stuff. Mm. So, yeah, I love that. So thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk about that issue with you guys.
Yeah, I'm completely agreed on the art. It's a fantastic-looking issue. I also like the fact that it gives a very brief recap on the team's origins in one page. That was really well done.
Yeah.
I also liked that there was a little bit of snark in some of those opening panels, like where it's saying, if you missed the last sensational issue, here's your crying towel, and offers the readers a New York Mets towel. And
exactly.
Just funny little things like that. But, yeah, it's that classic Dimitrov where it's got basically a one-off villain that we, as far as I can recall, we never see him again. He's just in this issue and that's it. And then the ending is completely bizarre, but it kind of works still. And it's almost got a Scooby-Doo ending where, oh, well, here's, you know, old man Johnson was trying to steal land and, you know, we saved the day, kids. It was just so wacky, but it works. Because it's just classic Patrol. But yeah, it was a great fun issue, yeah.
Has the chief ever met a scientist who didn't end up wanting to kill him?
No. But to be fair though, if you met the chief, you'd probably want to kill him too. Although, you know, but that stems a lot from my reading of Morrison and Rachel, you know, Apollo, all those issues after that, because he was not a nice guy in those issues. No. Whereas actually in the classic issues, he's quite a, you know, nice chap with a beard, you know. he's the voice of reason, you know, because man, you know, Marvel had this whole thing about having, you know, the Fantastic Four, a family that doesn't get along, as opposed to DC, where everyone's happy. But actually, you know, you look at these issues, the Doom Patrol, they hate each other. I mean, they have never, ever liked each other at all. They're always at each other.
There's a lot of issues. Yeah, a lot of issues where Rita is playing peacemaker between Larry and Cliff. You know,
I know, I know. And then I love the argument that they have in French. that is just amazing. I wonder whether we should just where is that bit where they speak in French? Hang on, let me just find where are you? Yeah, is that not how they act? And if one walks like ducks and screams like duck and quacks like duck, then one is better shut her flap or I is going to do eat for her. I don't know what it means. I can't understand any of it. It sounds amazing. It sounds amazing.
One of my other favorite panels in this is the scene of Dayton Manor, where it shows Rita and Steve in their separate beds. I just love the fact that was how things were back in the day.
Absolutely.
And it's just a nice little you know, throwback to how life was back then. You know, husband and wife were typically in separate beds, and that's a nice bit of realism there that I really enjoyed as well, even though it's only one panel. So
Was it real or was it just in media?
As far as I'm aware, it was real.
Maybe not so much. I don't know.
My grandparents. Yeah.
Well, my grandparents had separate beds, but that was only after a certain, like, well into their 60s, I believe, that happened.
Well.
Yeah. Anyway.
Listen, if you're really old and you listen to the show, write in.
I'll tell you what happens when I hit 60, okay?
So. Right.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, we got two single beds suddenly. Weird. Anyway,
I love the fact that he's the fifth at everything, isn't he?
Yeah. You know,
he's the fifth in class. He's the fifth in the queue. He's the fifth of everything. Great stuff. Oh, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. It's a good one. Shall we move on to the second issue, 118?
Yeah, cool. That's
okay. So this one has a very confusing cover date of March-April 1968. But it actually came out January 18, 1968. And another 12 center, fantastic. Mike's Amazing World of Comics, where we get these details from, has the circulation in this one. And this one sold 158,240 copies.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's insane. Oh,
those are the numbers that people dream of now, aren't they?
I know. Well, that's a smash hit today.
So, I know.
Wow. Edited by Murray Bolton off again. Artist Bob Brown, not the Green Senator on the cover, and looks to me like this cover is like an inventory cover, because it's basically it has Madame Rouge in the middle looking semi, you know, sort of serene on one side and very two-faced on the other side, saying, "You control the Doom Patrol, Chief, but I control you," and this issue doesn't really have that plot inside it.
It's like a modern-day comic where the cover has nothing to do with what's inside.
Sort of. But, I mean, I wonder if that's because of how gross Vidix, the villain in this, looks. So maybe they didn't want to put him on the cover because he is ugly.
That's possibly it, yeah.
So this is another Arnold Drake, Bruno Premiani joint, and let's get into it. So a splash page lets us know in this issue that the Doom Patrol will be fighting Vidix, Monarch of Light. And a caption box warns us that if you think he's the normal villain, you couldn't be wronger. Anyway, but the story opens, as so many hero team stories do, with the heroes training, keeping their superpowers in peak performance by working out in the Doom Patrol gym. Except Cliff Steele, Robot Man, gets tangled in stockings that have been strewn about. And the bandaged hero Larry Trainer can't zoom about in his negative energy form without attracting bobby pins that stick to his energy form and make him look like an electric porcupine. And the green-skinned Gar Logan, Beast Boy, slips off the trapeze that has been smeared with cold cream. And he lands on his butt with a splat? What's in his pants? Anyway, he tries to get free of the stockings. Griff tries to yank free of the stockings and instead yanks his phonogram and records completely over. But it's okay. He only likes Dixieland music, so no loss. And it's right here and now that we learn that Madame Rouge is not only French and an ex-villain and a former member of the non-inclusively named Brotherhood of Evil, but she is also a terrible house guest. Anyway, the chief pulls Madame Rouge aside to talk to her, which actually involves a recap of her evil stretchy power's origin, in case she was unaware of those details. He then subjects her to the trauma of a live broadcast of threats from the brain in the jar known as the Brain. Nice one, Chief. Anyway, the Brain, known as the Brain, wants her back with his non-inclusively named Brotherhood of Evil. And if the Doom Patrol don't let her go, vague bad stuff will happen. I hope you will see the light, he says. Cliff says to get rid of her, which is quite, helpful. But Chief says, no way, he's still got things he wants to do with her. Anyway, Cliff breaks a computer the size of a small car in his anger. Suddenly, the lights go out in the Doom Patrol headquarters. Madame Rouge tries to light a match, but they will not light. And Cliff grabs a flashlight, but it doesn't work either. They notice that the darkness has enveloped the city. And Beast Boy, who's still there, he turns into a bat and flies off to find out what's the light source he can see in the distance. And it's the truly gross form of Videx. Now, Videx looks like he has no skin, wears fancy high-tech goggles and non-fancy low-tech underpants. Anyway, so Gar turns into an eagle, one of the birds, not from like the band, not right. Don Henley or Glenn Frey. Anyway, and attacks. Anyway, Videx has this ridiculously verbosity of all the DP villains. He says, I am Master of Light, ruler of the Spectrum, and at this moment I begin my reign. And while he's explaining further what he's all about and what he's going to do, in a sentence that would take about 30 seconds to say, he blasts Gar with laser vision so quickly that Gar has no chance to get out of the way. So Beast Boy says, screw this, and flies away. And we see across Midway City, everything is going pretty badly. The cars are jammed in traffic, doctors can't operate, and suddenly the lights come back on, as the chief has predicted. Anyway, the next day we have a brief interlude of Gar at school for some reason, and his interest in Jill and how he's picked on by a bully named Warren Hollander in his incredible first appearance, so get it here, kids. And Jill tells Warren Hollander to leave Gar alone, and Gar thanks Jill, and they make out. No, actually, he insults her, and she slaps him. Anyway, back at the Doom Patrol headquarters, Chief has somehow deduced the identity of Videx. He's a scientist the Chief used to know. Has that ever happened before, that a scientist the Chief used
no.
to
know?
Anyway, and he's now in touch with the Brotherhood of Evil and working for them. And so the Chief knows every scientist in the world and has pissed every scientist in the world off. But this scientist is named Hjalmar Lichtmeister. By strange coincidence, I have a dog who is also a Lichtmeister. Anyway, Hjalmar is theorizing about invisibility, and the Chief said his ideas were sloppy but interesting. Sounds like Gar's butt earlier. Anyway. Rita, Larry and Cliff, they run off to Biotronics Laboratories, which is where they will find Videx. And he's waiting for them, swinging a metal beam about wildly. And he uses his powers to put a black cloud on Cliff so he can't see. And then when Negative Man comes in, he so slowly for a being that can fly around the world in several seconds, he blasts a jagged hole through his stomach in an awesome panel. Anyway, Cliff has had enough and fallen back on standard Doom Patrol Plan B, which is bust shit up. He throws a heavy turbine through a wall and then tries to pole vault attack, you know, the magical pole vault attack that always works. And he misses and ends up flying out the hole in the wall and landing, and the entire building collapses. And Videx bursts from the wreckage using photons, which are light particles, to blast out of the rubble. And Cliff says, screw this, and runs away. Anyway, back at the headquarters, they are looking after a Negative Man who has been hurt, but he's not dead, so they've reunited him with his body. And the Chief has decided to bust out the big guns, literally. He has built an anti-invisibility gun that is so large it will take 6 men to carry it. And Cliff says, screw that, I'm going to carry it. And he walks out in the street with it. But Videx is launching a fresh attack of dazzling lights and blinding the team. And so Reed and Cliff can only walk with the guidance of Beast Boy in bat form. And Cliff catches up to Videx and he fires the gun. But Videx uses his laser vision to weld Cliff's feet to the ground and then lasers Gar in the other wing, which he got him in before. And Videx turns invisible and then grows to the size of a giant, and things look really bad. But Rita embiggens herself and grabs the gun, firing it in all directions in a totally badass Ripley-looking panel. And Vitix is hit and crashes to the ground and returns back to his normal self, still in his undies, fortunately. Yay. So just to recap, Vitix's powers are darkness clouds, light prevention, so batteries and matches, growing big, super strength, laser eyes, and semi-invisibility and full invisibility. So that's
some... And shrinking trunks.
Yeah, that is some sweet comic book science right there.
Yep.
Yeah. So back at the base, Larry still hasn't recovered, and the chief has whipped up some sort of psychokinetic helmet so that Larry's unconscious form can use to it can project 2D animations of himself. Yay! And Madame Rouge tries to leave because of the brain threats, but Chief won't let her because they have unfinished business.
And, army business.
And the final page of the show shows Jill, who Gar offended earlier, apologizing for no reason, and. Then they make out. No, actually, he freaks out and runs away. And that is the high note that we end the issue on. So what do you think of this one, Frack?
I enjoy this issue. I mean, Vitix is a weird design, isn't he? I'm not entirely sure why his skin is invisible. And also, it's not just his skin is invisible. In areas, his whole abdominal wall and chest wall is missing as well. Mm. And you can see right into his lungs. Although a lot of it is, it's kind of anatomically correct, but kind of not in a weird way.
He's a bit Attack on Titan with the head, isn't he?
Yeah, he is very much Attack of the Titan on the head, yeah. But only in a couple of panels. In some panels, I mean, I recognize some of these pictures from anatomy books. But I thought it was an interesting issue. There was a lot of action and lots of lovely splash pages, some great art. The angry scientist is becoming quite a familiar trope now, isn't it? I do love the way there's education in this issue, as in, you know, rather than just saying laser, he describes it as light amplified by stimulated radiation. Mm. So the kids can learn stuff, which is very important.
Actual science, not just comic book science.
And then obviously in Showcase, because it's all in black and white, it's a bit difficult to work out what color Beast Boy is, but it's nice to know that he is lavender. In color, apparently, according to the great Warren Hollander, who I hope we'll see again.
It's so cool to finally get to Warren Hollander's first appearance, isn't it?
I know, right? I know. I mean, the excitement is palpable. It's palpable, I'm telling you.
I love the issue because of that.
And the splash page of Vitix attacking the Doom Patrol with a metal beam or whatever that thing is called is quite good actually. Mm. No, I did enjoy this issue. Obviously, there's a lot of French again, which I didn't understand, but it looked good and sounded right. And all of the scientists are bald and hairy. Have you noticed that? Every single one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That seems to be an important part of being an evil scientist is you've got to be bald and hairy and wear boxer shorts.
Yeah.
Wear boxer shorts. Which shrink into Speedos. That makes no sense.
And, I mean, there's a little bit of science, real science, is because if you're invisible, you can't see because the light particles have nothing to bounce around them. So you wear goggles so you can actually see. So maybe that's a little bit of proper science. Maybe. Mm.
Maybe.
I'm still puzzled by how, towards the end of the story, Cliff knew that Vitix was as big as a mountain, yet completely invisible at the same time. Like, if he's invisible, how did Cliff know? Oh, actually, okay, Robot Man, he's probably got different senses in his eyes. Never mind, as you were.
Now, what's absolutely hilarious is that robot, you know, he melts Robot Man's legs to the floor.
Mm. Yeah.
And he stays in that angle throughout in the rest of the panels. Yeah. He's at a smooth criminal angle. Michael Jackson's smooth criminal angle. And he stays like that for the whole thing. That's hilarious.
But Rita saves the day and she looks so cool with the gun.
Mm. She does look really cool. I mean, you know. She's probably the best on that whole team, really.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah,
she's the character I've really grown to appreciate reading these old runs.
She's been awesome in these two issues alone, but she's always pretty cool. Yeah.
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 Yeah. I love the way Negative Man is now communicating with everyone by means of bead art.
What is that about? Why are they doing that? Anyway, this whole Madame Rouge plot has to be coming to a head soon.
I can't wait.
She's such a slob.
And there's only, what, 3 issues left in this run?
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. 121 is the final one. You know?
So, that's really disappointing. Now, way to bring me down, Mike. Way to bring me down.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm sorry my truth bomb, you know, harmed you.
Ah, look, there's an appearance by Colbert as well. He's a surgeon who can't operate just because it's dark.
He looks like him. Oh, dear. All right, we've doomsplained these guys?
I believe
so. Yeah, great stuff.
It's midnight, the podcasting hour. Hello, listeners. It's your friend, PJ Frightful. That's PJ as in podcast jockey. And I'm dropping dreadful new episodes every 2 weeks. When the clock strikes midnight, the podcasting hour shines a candle on the dark corners of DC Comics. Those supernatural sagas of Swamp Thing, Dead Man, The Spectre, and more. The podcasting hour. It's a rotating anthology series boasting the terrifying talents of Ryan Daly, Rob Kelly, Paul Hicks, Ben Avery, Doug Zavisha, and other unfortunate souls. Prepare for the unexpected, open a doorway to nightmare, and enter the houses of mystery and secrets. The moon is full, and the dark spirits are rising. For it's midnight, the podcasting hour. Coming this Halloween, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Beware.
It's time for the Mailbag of Doom. And last time on the show, we asked the listeners, what did you think of the new Doom Patrol issue 1? And we first heard from Kyle at Kyle Pinion. And he said, it's the best debut issue of the year and is a wonderful little return to 90s Vertigo. I've missed it very much.
We also heard from Ryan Daly at RyanDaly01 from the Secret Origins podcast and Give Me Those Star Wars and Feathers and Foes and whatever else he's working on right now.
I hear he's got a new podcast coming out, Paul.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Something horror related?
Oh, it's Midnight, the podcasting hour, I think.
Oh, I think that's what it's called. Yeah. You wouldn't happen to know anything else about that, would you, Paul?
I know nothing about the show.
Right.
I have no connection at all, and I'm not going to be on that show talking about a series. So
right. Okay.
It's a myth. Anyway, he said, despite a lack of Monsieur Mala and the brain, it was a very exciting and intriguing first issue.
Mm.
All right.
Big Tim Styles, who is at Big Tim Styles on Twitter, said, really enjoyed it, even though I don't know what's happening. My daughter was just completely confused. Hopefully she'll stick with it. I can see some, you know, some readers being confused. Hell, I was a bit confused by parts of it too. Yeah.
We heard from Nikki at 100_beasts, and he's got some Larry Trainer avatar art there. And he said, it's the most exciting, he or she, I'm not going to assume, it's the most exciting thing I've read all year. It actually turned out even better than expected. I'm here for the ambulance ride.
Nice. Jonathan Dick at Real Last Name said, fantastic art and Cliff being grumpy always makes my day. Really enjoyed it. Hmm.
And Sam Johnson at Da Sam Johnson said, better than I'd hoped. Like The Force Awakens was to Star Wars, like coming home. And a smiley face.
That's a good call. That's a good call. We heard from KMW, otherwise known as Kevin, or at Ostrakus1 on Twitter, said, a great issue leaving me with lots of questions, some captivating new characters, a kitty cat, and it was completely Mento-free.
Now, Mento is an important part of the Doom Patrol, and I hope he does appear.
Yeah, I'm
in the fifth issue.
In the fifth issue.
We heard from Richie O'Hara at Beamond, who's at RickettyOB on Twitter. He said, loved it. Great work from all the creators. Casey's opening monologue was awesome. Humor, intrigue, and illusions aplenty. Brilliant.
Yes, yes. And we found some other comments online that didn't specifically reply to the question of the week, but some other interesting comments from people like Scott Snyder said, Doom Patrol was a great debut. Huge kudos to Jared Way and Nick Darrington and Tamara Bond Villain. So that was cool.
Scott follows me on Twitter, and I don't know why. It's really weird.
Doesn't find you're important, Paul.
I'm not important. I'm not at all important.
Oh, you're too humble, sir. Too humble.
I actually got a direct message reply from Scott on Twitter about something early in his Batman run, like a year or two ago. And yeah. I was freaking out because it basically said something. I asked him a question on Twitter and he responded. And it basically said something like, oh, you know, haha, no spoilers, can't tell you sort of thing. And I was freaking. I was still fairly new to Twitter. And I was freaking out going, holy crap, Scott Snyder replied to me. So I'm trying to respond to him. And that was when Mike learned that unless they're following you, you can't reply back.
With the DM, yeah. Yeah. I heard from, Matt Suntory-Griffith, who's one of the key people behind Comicosity. He said, love the new Doom Patrol title. Weird and poetic and gorgeous. This is what has been missing.
There was also an interesting comment from someone named Rafa, who is at Rafa Write Stuff, and they said, just finished reading the new Doom Patrol. The fuck was that? I don't know if that's a good or bad comment, but anyway.
Yeah. And Moby One, one of our regular listeners, good friend of mine, he said, I broke my trade waiting rule for Doom Patrol number one. Very fine look and feel to the book. A slow burner as far as jumping into Doom Patrol mythology and thumbs up emoji.
Yes, and Jamie McKelvey, at McKelvey, he said, damn, Doom Patrol number one is good.
Yeah. Wow. Yes. So, Frack, do you want to give us your little review of the issue?
Yeah, sure. So, it goes without saying that I love the issue. It reminded me of all the good stuff that I used, that I love from I guess from all iterations, but mainly it was more Morrison-like, if I'm honest, this mm-hmm. issue. The art was amazing. There's a lot of foreshadowing. I love the characters. I love Casey. I think she's really good, and she's obviously going to be our point of view character, although all doesn't seem to be as it is with her as well. You know, she, you know, the guy, her roommate blows up in front of her, and she doesn't seem to bat an eyelid. It seems to be like a normal kind of occurrence. And mm-hmm. You know, I listened to the last episode. I made a lot of the connections that you guys did as well. When I saw the train, I automatically thought of Crazy Jane. I couldn't think of anyone else really, although I don't know how that fits in. I love the little interlude with Niles Calder and his cheeky little grin at the end.
Yes.
That evil bugger. The cheeky little grin. I love the appearance of Cliff's jacket from the Morrison's run, because I really like Cliff's jacket. And, you know, I love the way that Danny makes an appearance in the end. You know, mm-hmm. obviously this chap. I mean, I hear what you're saying about Ricardo. I just wonder whether that's just that's something to like a red herring, and mm-hmm. that is actually Flex looking for Danny. But I mean, I guess it's possible. I love the way, you know, he's looking at bricks, isn't it? And you know, if you don't know the history, you won't get that. You won't get the thing that he's actually looking for, Danny the Street, who used to be a brick. No, I thought. I mean, I didn't. I have no idea what that superhero and that lion is at the end.
Ah.
But you know, it was a good first issue, as in it introduced the new characters well. It had the old characters in it. There's enough to whet our taste buds that we want to come back without explaining everything in too much detail, so that we think, oh, well, you know what? Well, I know what's going on here. I'm not going to wait. I'm not going to get the next issue. So, yeah, I in my weird roundabout way, I'm trying to say that I really enjoyed it and I love the art. And I enjoyed the Shade preview at the end as well, although I probably won't be getting that one because mm-hmm. I was never really a big fan of Shade. I am going to get the Cave Carson has a cybernetic eye for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about Mother Panic yet, but my LCS is keeping all the first issues for me. I love the way one of the bombs is called Grandma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of thought that last panel on the first page with the girl kissing what appears to be Chrome Dome, I kind of made the Crazy Jane connection with that one as well. Because that's how we left them, isn't it? In the Grant Morrison run anyway.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Great stuff. I loved it.
Yeah. Mike and I gave our review, but it struck me in the week since that with there's things we didn't talk about. We didn't talk much about the covers. And Roem Wad, which is what you hear chanted over the Euro interval. I don't know what that means, Roem Wad. Roem Wad. I keep thinking, is it some sort of, like, Hodor?
Well, it probably will end up being something like that, isn't it? Yeah. What is the name of that musical thing that Mike was talking about?
Rondo.
Oh, Rondo. That was not Rondo. Okay, I thought that was related to that, but maybe not. I mean, the great thing is that, look, we're 1 week into this comic, and we're all still talking about it, and we've all still got our theories about it. We all still don't know particularly what's going on. But it's comics like this, you know, they excite you, they cause discussion, you know. It's great every now and then to have everything just laid out, in, you know, like a traditional superhero comic. But every now and then you want a comic that sort of challenges you, forces you to think, fill in the blanks, you know. And I think this one does it in spades.
Yeah. And I did a little read through of all the reviews I could find, and pretty universally people liked it. There's a lot of, I don't understand it, but I like it.
Which is a good place to be.
Yes.
Yeah. Shout out to the Weird Science DC guys, because I think they're the only ones who delved as deeply as we did into what was inside the issue. So, Reggie over there, I think. He knows he's Doom Patrol.
Yep.
Yeah.
Should also give a quick shout out to Jess Camacho, who long-time listeners will, and those that follow us on Twitter may recall that she coined the phrase 2016, the year of Doom Patrol, back when this new title was announced. She did a review of it as well and gave it like a 8.3. So she was fairly happy with it as well. So, yeah.
And we also got a single email from Scott Arthur. And we talked about one of our respondents mentioned grit as something that they didn't understand about comics at first.
I believe that was Martin Gray.
Martin Gray. I'm unfamiliar with Martin. Is he a new listener?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, Scott Arthur gave us a bit more history on grit and gave us some shots of the back of comics. And looking at these ads, I've seen these ads, but I obviously don't read ads in comics.
Used to be in the back, isn't it? In the back of the comics, you know, getting kids to sell stuff and then trade things for presents or whatever.
Yeah. So the more magazines or whatever, greeting cards that the kids sold, the more they could pick off the list of, grit prizes.
Yep.
So. Yeah. Sea Monkeys were one of them, though. And you weren't that impressed.
Yeah. So thanks for that, Scott. Well, I think that's it for this episode. So thank you to Frack for coming on. So, Frack, if people want to get in touch with you and, you know, hear more of your podcasting stylings, where can they go?
Well, I don't have a podcast, but I have appeared on Blaine's 75 Best Marvel Stories, covering Astonishing X-Men, Wolverine, Born Again, which is my all-time favorite Daredevil story, and Craven's Hunt, which is my all-time favorite Spider-Man story. But, you know, if people want to follow me, I'm at Fractures on Twitter. I'm glad to hear from people. And thanks again, guys. It's a real honor. I love this podcast. It's my go-to every week. It's the first thing I'll listen to once it's released. Oh. And it's an honor to be on it. So thank you very much for this opportunity. Really appreciate it.
Who would have thought when you replied to my tweet back in May of 2014 that we would be here on this day, Frank?
I know, right? It's amazing.
Yeah, my tweet was,
I tell you what,
sudden idea, Doom Patrol podcast, and you wrote back, that is an awesome idea, in all caps. And here we are today.
Here we are today. Yeah, wow. It's great. Thanks very much, guys.
No worries. So if you want to get in touch with the show, there's a next question of the week, which we tell you, which will help you decide whether you want to get in touch with us. So, and this one is, what is your favorite conflict in fiction? So
I've got my answer already.
Oh, wow. So save it. Yeah. Save it. Send it in. Okay. And you
I'm not going to save it. I'm going to tell you now. It's the French conflict. I don't understand what's been said. But I'll think of something else for next.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So if you want to tell us, you can get in touch with Twitter at WFDpod, email at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. The Waiting for Doom Facebook page is there. And mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com is where you can – well, Doug Zavisha puts up posts which support this show. So he will put up art. You'll be able to see some of the things we've talked about this episode. And you can answer in the show thread, the post thread for there. So, yeah. Anyway, what's on the show for next week, Mike?
Next week we are taking the week off.
Yay! Oh.
Wait, what? What? Hang on, what?
Listen, what? We're both very old men, and occasionally we need a little break.
Oh man, this is the worst. I come on a podcast. I finally get on your podcast, and then you cancel the next episode. What will people think?
Yeah, Frack, what have you done?
I know, right? Holy cow, Frack, the podcast killer.
Oh, dear.
But what are we doing the week after that, Paul?
Well, when we come back, we are looking at the Volume 3 of the Doom Patrol, which is the John Arcudi, Tangen, and Hewitt Doom Patrol, and we're looking at issues 3 and 4 of that. So if you are unfamiliar with those and you can't find a copy because they can't be really found unless you're looking in a back issue bin, listen to us. We'll take you through it. Mm. So yeah, please come and join us for that, everyone.
I'll be there.
Excellent.
Fantastic. And now some salami-themed music.
God. Thanks for joining us, guys. We'll catch you again next time for more Waiting for Doom.
See you later.
Bye.
Salami theme music.
Let's get it on.